Oh, yeah, it's the best news we've had since 2001 for sure, and it applies to forests that we've been campaigning for a lot longer than that.
And there's been heaps of protests in these forests over the years, including other forests as well. Could you elaborate to the lengths that activists have gone to protect Karri and indeed other forests of this kind over the last couple of decades?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, one of the most common, most effective strategies that we've employed in WA and of course around Australia and the world is non-violent direct action, which is perhaps the most personally taxing. And what that's involved in the southwest is people setting up blockade camps in the forests and maintaining them for months and sometimes years at a time. And, you know, it's incredibly effective in bringing people down into the forest and educating them about the issues. And it also builds teams and gets people ready to be able to deal with the issues as they unfold. So we've used that to very great effect in the southwest. But then also, of course, you have to be reaching the city. So it's also about storytelling and bringing people on board in the metro areas. And we do that in various ways and give people opportunities to be able to express their concerns in ways that reach the decision makers.
Yes, I suppose the direct action is a very last resort, isn't it, to chain yourself to a tree, for example, in order to stop the machines from doing what they're planning to do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a flow chart that explains non-violent direct action, and it starts with education, it moves on to negotiation, and then if negotiation has failed and you genuinely believe that this is a serious matter that has to be resolved, then you move on to non-violent direct action.
And yeah, and it is effective, I suppose, when it physically stops those machines for loggers and chainsaws, things like that, to actually do the things that they do.
It does, and you know, and as importantly, it spreads the message, and it gets the story out there.
Could you explain to me just briefly, what is a two-tiered forest?
Well, there's three classifications of Karri forests in the southwest in terms of their disturbance history. Mm-hmm. So there's the old growth, which in Karri forests in WA are defined as uncut. So those are the old Karri forests that haven't had any logging in them whatsoever.
There wouldn't be many of those, would there?
No, there's not. There's very few. There's even fewer in the Jarrah. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's the regrowth forests, and those are forests that have been clear-felled and come back up from a clear-felling operation. So they are even-aged, almost always pure Karri forests. They don't really look like forests. They look more like plantations or tree lots. And then in between, there's the two-tiered Karri. So the two-tiered Karri look and function like old-growth forests, but so far they've missed out on protection because of the very narrow definition of old-growth in place. So if you imagine that you're walking through an old-growth Karri forest and eventually you come across one stump from maybe two guys with a crosscut saw 100 years ago cut it down, that one stump disqualifies the 2 hectares of forest you've been walking through from old-growth status, and instead it's classified as a two-tiered forest.
And then they can be harvested from there? Because of that definition.
Yes, that's right. If it's disqualified from old growth status, then it can be clear felled. But now what we have is this 12-month freeze, and obviously we're pushing and hoping that it will be made into a permanent protection.
Is the Karri considered a threatened ecosystem?
No, it isn't.
If it's not considered a threatened ecosystem, why does it need protection?
Well, the southwest forests are magnificent forests that grow nowhere else on Earth, and they're a part of a global biodiversity hotspot, one of only 36 of those on Earth. They're incredibly biodiverse and incredibly important for climate and water and culture and wildlife, of course. And they've been intensively logged and cleared over the last couple of hundred years. So what remains of those native forest ecosystems is so precious in the southwest for all of those environmental and cultural values. So while it's not classified as a threatened ecological community, like, for example, the Bankshire woodlands on the Swan Coastal Plain, they have very high environmental values. And because they've been subject to such intensive disturbance, those that have still got those original ecosystem functions are incredibly important in the landscape.
Yes, so then the diversity in those places is immense, isn't it?
It is absolutely immense, and also these two-tiered Karri forests specifically are often the ones that were left behind by the wood chipping industry. So they're fringing rivers all the way from west of Bridgetown right down through Pemberton and then south of Northcliffe, and they're protecting the water quality and flow in those river systems, and they're also providing habitat for wildlife that has been lost in the surrounding forests because of the clear felling.
What is the significance, do you think, of this decision, and where does this ban take effect?
Well, it applies to about 9,000 hectares of what's classified as two-tiered carry forests, those are those really significant areas of carry that are otherwise surrounded largely by areas that have been clear felled. I suppose the significance of it in terms of political processes is that it's the first time that we've had a protection such as this, albeit temporary at this stage in this case, since 2001. So what it says to us, and it should say to everybody who's been involved in forest conservation over the years, is that when we are heaping on the pressure, as we have been over the last few years, we can actually reach the decision makers, and we have to maintain that, and we have to keep doing that, because it's so important now, with the climate crisis and the ecological crisis that we're facing here and globally, that communities are standing up to protect places like this.
So why do you think the FPC has decided to do this now, to pause harvesting?
Well, look, there has been a shift in the carry industry in the southwest since Parkside from Queensland bought AusWest. They've said that they don't need and are happy not to take any of the large diameter carry logs. So it's certainly been easier for government to be able to make this change in the carry than it has been in the Jarrah. But you know, to be realistic, it's happened because there's been a very high degree of pressure applied from the community.
You've pushed for a permanent ban on logging in these forests. Is this a step in the right direction?
It's definitely a step in the right direction, and temporary protections like these are often the first step towards permanent protection. But it's really not good enough yet either. While it's excellent news that we're very much welcome, there's a lot more to be done to get full and secure protection for the native forests. And we know from a scientific perspective, from a community, cultural, wildlife, climate perspective, that the native forests are worth so much more standing. So we want to see this made permanent, but it's also critical that we take it the next step further after that.
And that's the permanent an end to logging and carry, and I suppose Jarrah, I suppose.
That's right. I mean, we've put forward a comprehensive plan called Forest for Life, which would generate 860 to 940 new jobs in the timber industry in ecologically beneficial farm forestry and plantations. And that's the direction that the industry is going in, and it has to go in. And the sooner it completes the transition out of native forests, the better for everybody.
Excellent. So there's a future in forests, not just necessarily logging.
Of course, yes, of course there is, and the future is in us recognising the incredible value that forests have when they're protected.